When it comes to religious controversy, nothing beats the Bible. Yes, the Good Book is a book that preaches peace, but there are still battles being waged over its contents. For example, some theologians claim that certain ancient texts, the so-called secret gospels, shed new light on Christian beliefs, and some say they should have been included in the Bible itself. Getting the most attention is the Gospel of Thomas, which was discovered in 1945. The public has been getting increasingly intrigued about it, so we decided to debate its merits with Princeton professor Elaine Pagels, author of the bestseller Beyond Belief, The Secret of Thomas. Earlier, she wrote The Gnostic Gospels, which won a National Book Award. On the other side is Michael Lacona, who represents the more conservative historians who are sort of doubting Thomas's on this issue. Mike is co-author of The Case for the Resurrection of Jesus. Why don't we sort of set the stage and be clear about this, what Thomas is? It's not referring, when we talk about Thomas, to the apostle named Thomas. What is this gospel?
This gospel is attributed to the disciple named Thomas. It's an ancient gospel written in Greek like the others in the New Testament. It's a list of sayings of Jesus attributed to the disciple Thomas, and a whole text of it was recently found in 1945. So we now have new evidence about one of the early Christian Gospels.
I interviewed, I'm sure some of you are aware of, Dr. Bruce Metzger, eminent expert on the text of the Bible and professor emeritus at Princeton Seminary. And I asked him about his opinion. He said, well, his assessment is that Thomas was written about A.D. 140, and that he said it rightly was not included in the Bible because early Christians, although they could hear the voice of Jesus clearly in, for instance, the Gospel of John, they could only hear it muffled in a muffled and distorted way in Thomas and with all kinds of other stuff.
First of all, the earliest editors thought because they hadn't seen it before that it must be late, and that's how they dated it that way. Other people who looked at the parables and the sayings of Jesus see that there's some very early material in Thomas. I take a sort of conservative view of dating and dated about the end of the first century, about the year 80 or 90. Second, the sayings of Jesus that come across in Thomas, some of them are identical, many of them are identical with what you find in Matthew and Luke.
As a historian of Jesus, my primary interest is, does the Gospel of Thomas reflect what Jesus actually said and taught? Does it actually reflect the historical Jesus? And nearly every scholar in the world will say, when it comes to those sayings of Jesus that have sort of Gnostic tendencies in them that are not found in the New Testament, the answer would have to be no to that question. Now, when it comes to should it be included in the New Testament, the four New Testament Gospels were always accepted as being authoritative from apostles and apostolic tradition, that is, and the letters of Paul. So whereas some of the other books or letters were disputed, the four Gospels in Paul's letters were nearly always accepted as authoritative, whereas the Gospel of Thomas was specifically excluded from the early church, probably because it was late. I wouldn't place it 80 to 90 like Elaine would. I would place it early part of the second century.
Let's define this Gnostic. We're talking about, Michael, when we talk about that.
Well, I would consider them aberrations on what the disciple and Jesus actually taught.
When people talk about it as Gnostic, it's a way of saying it's not a real gospel. It doesn't mean much more than that. The term is a kind of smokescreen. I don't use it anymore. I'm looking at early gospel traditions, and Thomas is an interesting missing link in the story of the formation of the Christian gospels.
What does it tell you, Elaine, that surprised you or illuminated your understanding of the ancient world?
What it suggests is that Jesus had a secret teaching, or various kinds of secret teaching. The Gospel of Mark in chapter 4 says he taught privately to the disciples things that he didn't teach outside. Now, we don't know for sure whether the Gospel of Thomas represents that kind of actual secret teaching of Jesus. There's no way to tell.
That's an important caveat.
But if he did, it could have been. It's not meant to replace the other Gospels. I totally agree with Michael on that. It's meant to supplement them the way the Gospel of John does, in fact.
The Gospel of Thomas talks about the resurrection in terms of taking off the garment or shedding it. I think that reflects pagan influence because the pagan concept of the afterlife was that people would become a disembodied spirit. And the later Gnostics, just for the sake of discussion, we could label them if Lane's fine with that. Otherwise, happy to use her term. They adopted that, and they believed that we would become disembodied spirits. That's what wanted to do. Contrast that with the earliest writer, Paul, who defines resurrection in 1 Corinthians 15 as he talks about this mortal, will put on immortality. This corruptible, this body that we have right now, will put on a new one. So it's not a shedding and becoming a disembodied spirit. It's a transformation from Paul. And that corresponds with the Jewish writings before him and the Gospels after him. The body that dies is the same body that's raised. So that's just one issue, many.
What the Gospel of Thomas suggests is that you start with faith and you end with spiritual insight, if you reach that point. And this is a common path in the ancient world. It was known to many of the church fathers. And so the teaching about salvation is a teaching about transformation.
Michael, you agree?
Well, I agree with insofar as she said that, but there are some differences. For example, the Thomas talks about finding the light within you, and it's the spark of divinity that is within you that you pursue, and that's how you find God. It's not necessarily through the light which Jesus provides, what we see in John. So there's a difference there. In John, you follow Jesus, who is the light. In Thomas, the light's within you because you are that spark of divinity. So there is some differences there.
There's a bend, I suggest, between communities that saw Jesus as John did and those who saw Jesus as Thomas. John's commitment is that Jesus alone is the light, and apart from him you're in complete dark. John says Jesus comes from the divine light, as all beings come forth and are manifest divine image, that God created humankind in his image. It's not a pagan image from Stoicism. It's right from the Hebrew Bible about God created humanity in his image.
I think this, when we look at things historically, and this is why also we have in the New Testament, more reliably depict an accurate picture of Jesus. The Gospels in the New Testament, Paul and the early oral traditions before him are very uniform and coherent in saying that Jesus is more than just divine, he's himself. We find in early hymns and early creeds that predate even the writings of Paul, and then Paul clearly states it. And then we find it hinted in the Synoptic Gospels, and then again it's very clear in John. So it's a really clear stream, whereas we don't find that in Thomas. And we do find that, say, Mark and John certainly have eyewitness testimony from the disciples of Jesus themselves. We don't have any idea where Thomas came from.
When we were first introduced to the Gospel of Thomas, we thought, as Michael said, that it's first of all late, and secondly, it's completely alien to the New Testament text. What we now see, after we know it much better, is that it's probably much earlier than that. I don't think it's as early as some people think, but about the time of the Gospel of John. And second, that it's not meant to be read alone. It can be read as a complement, say, with the Gospel of Mark, as the public teaching of Jesus and possibly the private teaching. That's what makes it so intriguing.
Michael, you think that's accurate?
No, not exactly. I wouldn't read it with Mark. I don't think the early Christians would have done that. You know, my interest, again, as a historian of Jesus, is to say, does it tell us anything about Jesus' planet? So I think the first Christians were right in regarding or excluding Thomas as not an accurate teach Jesus.
Let me just add to that, though, that both Mark and Paul agree that secret teaching is part of not only Jesus' tradition, but Paul's.
Can I present that I may be a contradiction between the New Testament Gospels and Thomas?
Sure.
In Logion 14, Thomas says that Jesus says that if you fast, you're sinning. If you pray, you will be condemned. If you give to the poor, you'll hurt yourself spiritually. So sorry for the tsunami victims. No compassion from Thomas's community there. Now contrast that with what we find in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, where, especially in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, you know, when you pray, when you fast, when you help the poor, there's a whole lot of difference between the moralities that's presented in the synoptics versus what we find in Thomas.
It's true that in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, when Jesus is asked about fasting, prayer, and almsgiving, he gives specific instruction. In Thomas, when he's asked about the same questions and saying, he answers, do not tell lies and do not do what you hate, because everything is known before your Father in heaven. So here, instead of giving specific instructions about how to do that, he says, do what you love and do what your Father in heaven sees. I don't think it's necessarily meant to be a contradiction, but it's addressed to people on different levels of spiritual maturity.
That's
some
satisfying.
Are supposed to fast, pray, and give, and some are.
Well, I would just say that there are lots of different sayings in these Gospels that when you pick out one or the other, we can find a problem with them. What interests me is the whole church, and I think it just raises an important question about how we understand addition.
should Christians read alongside? I mean, I have no problems with Christians writ for knowing what some of the that were different than Christians, claiming to be Christians, but were regarded as aberrations from true Christian doctrine. I think it's for us to know what they're teaching.
Michael, when people talk about who the real Christians are, that's the whole question. I mean, it still is the question. There's a time when Roman Catholics talked about Lutherans as heretics. I mean, this is a game that, unfortunately, Christian groups have played, saying we're the Christians and you're not. And I take a rather inclusive view that these are different groups of Christians, and they have somewhat different perspectives on the teaching of Jesus. To me, it's a fascinating reading of the early Christian movement to see these as people understanding the gospel.
Michael, you would not say the Gospel of Thomas deserved to be elevated to the level of the gospels that are in the Bible. Is that correct?
No, not at all, because I don't think that they present apostolic. They weren't from the original apostles. They take some teachings from it, but certainly other teachings are aberrations from the disciples Jesus.
Okay, same question for Professor Fagels.
Well, I have a rather different view of the formation of gospel tradition. I'm not suggesting it belongs in the canon, because that's not the interesting question to me. The question is, how did we get the gospels we got? And I think Thomas was an early interpretation of Jesus' teaching and presenting some of his actual teachings in a way that's very significant for the way we understand this tradition and the way it grew.
Well, Elaine and Michael, fascinating topic. You know, the Da Vinci Code and other books have popularized discussion on these Gnostic Gospels, Thomas in particular, and I think you've done a really good job of putting it into perspective from two different viewpoints. So thank you for that.